come into his presence with singing, know that the Lord is God. It is he that made us, and we are his. We are his people, the sheep of his pasture. Enter into his gates with thanksgiving and his courts with praise. Give thanks to him. Bless his name. For the Lord is good. His steadfast love endures forever, and his faithfulness to all generations. Let us pray. Heavenly Father, as we begin this academic year, we do so with a sense of history. As we celebrate our 100 years, we are thankful, as a servant of the church, to continue Christian thought in this academic community. Especially are we thankful for the students who have come to prepare for their ministry in the work of thy kingdom, and for this faculty and administration who will reveal the truths of thy kingdom. In trust, we offer this college to continue to advance thy kingdom work in the name of thy Son, Jesus. Shall we all say, Amen.
Dr. Kellis, Dr. Christensen, Pastor Schatower, Dr. Jorgensen, Mr. Speck, members of the faculty, students, and friends. Welcome to the opening convocation of this, our 100th academic year. In accordance with our tradition, we will be installing student senate members, honoring those on the dean's list, recognizing regents and academic scholars, introducing new faculty members, and recognizing promotion. Special today will be the address by a professor from a sister college who has carefully researched the first 75 years of the Dana story and published the result in the Saga of the Tower. This 100th year promises to be an exciting one. We're already watching the new Performing Arts Center rise out of the ground, as it were, from the site formerly occupied by Alumni Memorial Auditorium. As the year progresses, we expect to see the beginning of the restoration and renovation of Old Main. Restoration on the outside and renovation on the inside. Besides these physical changes, we will be celebrating our centennial in a series of special events. We invite and urge you, new students, returning students, faculty, staff, and friends of the college, to unite in this year of celebration. May that celebration bind us more closely together and at the same time serve as a challenge for us to recommit ourselves to Dana's mission. And for you students, may it include a commitment to excel in your academic ventures, and may it include an experience of fulfillment in Christian community living. Then for us faculty and staff, may it be a rededication to the task of guiding our students in their intellectual, spiritual, and physical development. For you friends of Dana, may it be a time during which you renew your identification with Dana and the ideals for which it stands. And then for all of us, may it be a time when we experience the call of God to fulfill the purposes of his kingdom in our midst.
At this time, friends, we will call upon the newly installed president, Chris Beck, to bring a response on behalf of the Student Senate.
I would like to take this opportunity to welcome everyone here to the 100th academic year of Dana College. This is an exciting time to be a student here at Dana because our accomplishments this year can begin Dana on another 100 years of service to its students. As Student Senate President, I'm looking forward to a great year. But to have a great year, student involvement in the activities on campus is very important. Since Dana is a relatively small college, we are given every opportunity to become involved in the clubs and organizations here. Rush night is this Thursday evening, so sign up and become involved. I'm sure you will find it rewarding and fun. In closing, I'd like to point out that Student Senate's main objective is to serve the students in the best way we can. Get to know your Senate representatives and feel free to attend any of our meetings and let your voice be heard. Let's all work together and have a good year. Thank you.
President Callis, members of the platform committee, faculty, students, and I see so many familiar faces, I have to say, and friends. Thank you for that very generous introduction, Dr. Callis. I shall try to avoid any parentheses this morning. I was told when I was first asked if I would come over here to speak today that I could have between 15 and 20 minutes. So as a precaution, I have a timer on my watch, and I will now set it so that I will be able to know how much time is left. Because I have to tell you, as I got into this topic and began reading back over my notes and the things I had turned up as I was researching the history of this institution for its 75th anniversary, well, I have about 45 to 50 minutes here. I'll try to keep it down to 20. If you noticed that in recent years, there are a lot of Lutheran colleges in our area that are celebrating their centennial up in Minnesota, over in Iowa, here in Nebraska, down in Kansas. Either recently have or they're planning to, or as is Dana and Midland right now, currently celebrating the centennial, which I think simply tells us that about 100 years ago,
A lot of Lutherans are very concerned about building schools of higher education. That this, of course, is true is kind of a natural development. You remember, those were the big years following the American Civil War, about a generation after that period, the years of the tremendous Northern European migrations to this country, where they literally by the hundreds and the thousands and the millions flowed from Germany and the Scandinavian countries, many of them coming out here to settle in the Midwest. Some of you may recall 7 years ago when Her Majesty Queen Margrethe of Denmark spoke at the, she was the commencement speaker, she was touring the United States during our bicentennial year and gave the commencement speech here at Dana. And one of the things she said with a great deal of pride is that those many, many Danes who came to America did not come, as some people had, for religious freedom. They had that back in Denmark, but they came for land. And that was the thing that drew them, land of their own. Because you remember that our ancestors in Europe lived at a time when the population had greatly outstripped the supply of land. And if you were a farmer, it was almost a certain thing you were a peasant farming someone else's land. And it had probably been that way for generations in your family. But after the passage of the Homestead Act, here in America was the promise of rich soil, large farms, free land, if you would only come and take it up. And so it was that they came. And naturally enough, too, they began to settle in little communities of their own people. And out here across these prairie plains, Minnesota, Iowa, Nebraska, Kansas, little communities of Swedish or Norwegian or Danish or German settlers began to grow up and cluster together, keeping their language, but working together to open the opportunities that this new country offered to them. And as they built those little communities, they wanted their institutions. And of course, one of the first of the institutions they would want would be the church, to bring with them the faith that they had known in the old country. Well, the churches back in Europe were not much help. You might think, with our emphasis on mission today, that they would have sent missionaries out, they would have done a lot of mission work among their people in America. Such was not the case. A few pastors came over from Denmark, but the early church fathers quickly realized, if we are going to serve the spiritual needs of our people, we must build schools, schools to train the parochial school teachers, and schools to train our pastors, which meant seminaries. And that, very simply, is why there was this, I don't want to call it a wave or a rash or what, but this outpouring of the building of colleges and seminaries among the Lutherans in this part of the country approximately a century ago. In very simple terms, that's the origins of Dana College as we celebrate her 100th anniversary beginning now. The Danes were part originally of a larger Scandinavian conference, but gradually these nationalities went their own way, and a small group of Danish pastors and laymen decided they could better serve the needs of the Danish people here in the Midwest by their own separate church or separate synod. And so it was that in the fall of 1884, following some preliminary meetings, a very small group, 9 pastors, a handful of laymen, met at a little country church just not many miles northwest of here, a little country church called Argo, just across the line into Burke County. And there they voted to build or to organize their own church organization. Well, it wasn't very large in size, but they made up for it in the name, because they called it the Danish Evangelical Lutheran Church Association in America. And that was the church that began. And they knew immediately that the next step had to be a school to train their pastors. And so the same meeting that organized that church body commissioned one of their members, Pastor A.M. Anderson. He was then serving First Lutheran in Blair. He was serving the Argo Church and several others. They commissioned him to head a committee to start a seminary. How'd you like that kind of a job? By the way, Anderson, go out and start a seminary. That was just about all he had to go on. They had no building for the school. They had no land on which to build the building. They hadn't even selected a location. Where was it going to be? But Pastor Anderson was not one to let little considerations like that hold him up. He and his wife had built a modest-sized home in Blair. I think I drove by it this morning. It's been altered so much, I'm not sure I hit the right one. But he built a small, they had a small home in Blair. And they decided with a little rearrangement they could take 3 rooms on the upper floor for the seminary. The 2 smaller rooms became dormitories, the larger one a classroom. In the fall of 1844, four students moved in, and classes began with Pastor Anderson teaching in his own home. And Mrs. Anderson, I might add, doing the housekeeping and cooking the food for the students. That is the event that we date as the beginning of Trinity Seminary. Now, how does Dana College get into the picture? Keep in mind that most of these young men who made their way to Pastor Anderson's home were not well educated by our standards. Most of them were young, very young, immigrants from Denmark. One of them, at least, told the story of how he'd come over from Denmark very recently. He'd spent the summer working on farms. With the coming of fall and the end of the farming season, he was unemployed. And he found it was cheaper to go live with the Andersons and study than it was to stay in a boarding house. So he ended up there, only to find that under the influence of his fellow students and of Pastor Anderson, he had a spiritual awakening and received what he felt was a call, and he entered the ministry. You know, that story has been repeated again and again throughout the history of the seminary. Young men, many of them farm boys with a little time off in the winter, coming up to the college, taking a few courses, and discovering their real mission in life was the parish ministry. Well, you could hold classes upstairs in a house for a while, but next year there were five new students. It was obvious that larger accommodations had to be found. And so the search for a location and the money to build went ahead. Two Blair citizens donated some land west of the town. That, of course, is right over here in the vicinity of the central part of the campus today. The town of Blair itself pledged half the cost of a building on a matching fund basis. The church began to subscribe the rest. And in the fall of 1886, Trinity Seminary had its own building and ready to begin classes there. That original building we still see, looking at it this morning as we were gathering out there before the processional over here, the central part of Old Main. Life was, by our standards, pretty primitive in those days. Pastor Anderson, for example, had at one time served seven congregations widely spread around, and he did it with a horse and buggy. Many a time he had to be pulled out of the river when he tried to ford it and got stuck. And I think for students today, life in Old Main, as it was then, would not have been too attractive. I'm sure you have some complaints about the dormitory as a student. But you should have tried it in Old Main back in those days. If you ever saw a picture of Old Main in the early years, there were huge chimneys on each side. Those chimneys were necessary because each room was heated by its own stove. And one of the jobs that every student had, he didn't want to freeze to death during a winter night, was to go down and fill a coal scuttle with some coal from the community coal pile and bring it up and start his stove, so there'd be a little heat in the room that night. Forget the coal and your water bucket will be froze solid in the morning. Why water bucket? Well, there was no running water, no plumbing into the building, so everybody had a bucket. There was a pump out in back of Old Main. You filled the bucket at night. Of course, that was also handy for water fights. They had those in those days, too. For light, you had to be sure to go down to the big barrel and get some kerosene for your kerosene lantern if you were going to study that night. As far as other forms of plumbing, well, there was a row of outhouses for women in the west part, and the gentlemen's powder rooms were located over here on the hill, somewhere between here and the present site of Old Main. One other significant difference. Room and tuition for the entire year came to the fantastic sum of $35. But the differences we're concerned about this morning are not then and now, but the fact that Dana, and you're emphasizing this theme in your centennial, Dana has made a difference. And it made a difference then. Sure, there were other schools, training pastors, and pre-seminaries for the young men who had not yet learned the basics before they came to seminary course of education. And out of that pre-seminary came the college that later was named Dana College. But there were other schools they could have gone to, schools like Trinity Seminary, were deeply concerned that the young men and women of that day have a firm grounding in the spiritual beliefs of their religious faith. But there was another difference that was here at Dana that made it unique. It was a school particularly for the Danish immigrants who came here, who wanted in many cases to preserve the best of their national heritage here in America. And to them, the school had a special purpose, helping them adjust to the life in America, but helping them also to retain that sense of the great cultural background that was theirs through their ancestors in Denmark. At one point, it was announced that Dana College was going to try in its own small way to be to the Danes in America what the University of Copenhagen was to the Danes in Denmark, a center of the best of Danish culture and language and literature. And in this way, Dana made a difference from the very beginning, providing for those people who had been uprooted from their native land in Denmark and had come over here, both a chance to adjust, but a chance to keep in touch with that which was best in their background. Then after a few years, particularly as we get into the 20th century, the picture changed. Those original immigrants were now growing older. Their children had been born in America, and while they had most of them learned to speak Danish in the home, they had made outside contacts through school or through work and had picked up some English. In other words, the people were becoming bilingual, speaking both Danish and English, but neither one very well. It was a case where it was a little too thin all across, and there were no clear senses of the cultural roots of either Denmark or America. And so Dana's mission changed. She now had to deal with the children of the original immigrants and give them both that sense of their new land and its culture based on the English language, but also what they had inherited from their ancestors based on Danish literature and language, and special courses in Danish literature and language, as well as English literature and language, then were brought into being. And at the same time, there was another very important mission. For these people, especially the second generation, who for many of us were parents or grandparents or even great-grandparents now, there's always the danger that in this transition to America, they would be uprooted not only from their old cultural traditions, but from their religious faith. Too much the temptation to just pull everything out by the roots. It's a whole new thing. And so Dana and Trinity had it as their special mission to preserve the spiritual commitment of the Christian faith that had come with their ancestors and to pass that on to the next generation as well. For young people who had no opportunity for high school, and public high schools in those early years were rather few and far between, Dana offered the academy in English for English-speaking students, and the old Højskole, as it was called, for the Danish-speaking students. Another need that Dana recognized earlier was that these people must be trained for their work. Not everyone would go into the ministry or into teaching in the church school. So there was a normal school to prepare students to teach in the public school. There was a commercial course very early, preparing students for business careers. A special school of music went along with all of these. World War I was a difficult time for colleges with foreign languages because in the emotional kind of irrational patriotism that marked that time, not only German, but all foreign language was condemned. And we find the campus publications, the campus newspapers, even the synodical minutes, gradually moving from being transcribed in the Danish language, coming out in the English language, and then in the 20s. The 20s was not all a time of difficult adjustment to prejudice against foreigners. It was also a time of growth. New buildings were needed. There had been no building program since the college and the seminary were originally founded. And so the college carried on what was called the Greater Dana Program, a special fund drive to raise money for new buildings. One of those new buildings was the one that was just recently torn down over here, old Alumni Memorial, to make room for the new Center for the Performing Arts. Also in the 20s, it was determined that Dana was not going to be just a junior college. It would be a four-year college, and the first student to graduate with a bachelor's degree was graduated during that time. Danish immigrants continued to come here, particularly during the winter, to learn English, so that the needs were still being filled. They had changed, but Dana was still filling them. And then, of course, came the traumatic times of the Depression. You said something about going through the history of this institution. We're catching 100 years in about 5 minutes here. Pull on your hat. But in the Depression, when suddenly everything went out from the bottom financially, and some of you can remember those grim years. How was Dana going to survive? How could she help students if they couldn't afford to come? Well, under the determined leadership of a president called Erland Nelson, Dana developed what was called the Dana Plan. It affected every possible kind of economy. They cut the college costs to the bone, and they offered students a full year of study, tuition, room, board, books, for $244. That was a lot of money in those days, but it made it possible for students to pay their way sometimes with
things in kind. Farm students came with produce for the college dining hall. One group of students showed up with several truckloads of livestock. Two sons of old Professor Vieg, who had long been seminary president and professor, and he had a fantastic library. When he died, his sons paid their tuition in books, which were then put into the Dana Library. Dana continued to serve the needs of those students who wanted a college education, but could not afford it in any other way. Since World War II, of course, Dana has broadened its mission. It's no longer just a center of Danish-American culture, though it remains that. But as the other strains through merged churches have come in, Dana has paid attention to the traditions of other nationalities as well. I suspect nothing better reflects that. And the beautiful tradition that is now established in an early Sunday in December, the sights and sounds of Christmas, it begins the holiday season. And as many of you know, attracts visitors from all over this part of Nebraska and western Iowa. I wish there were time, and there isn't, to talk about some of the people who have made this college through the years. You can read the names of some of them in the plaque over by the southeast corner of Pioneer Memorial. You'll see the pictures of some of them up in the big room on the top floor of that building. But it's been a century of faith. The people who believed in the mission of this college and seminary and devoted themselves to it. Many of them did their little things in a small way. There was one former president and professor who found a particularly unique way to deal with the student who wanted to sleep through classes in the morning. There was one student who consistently didn't get to class. So finally, the professor just called him and went to his dormitory room, found the student sacked out there. No scolding, no criticism. He said, "Are you sick?" And of course, the student, thinking that was a good reason, he said, "Yes." Before the student realized what had happened, the professor had poured him a big spoonful of castor oil and shoved it into his mouth. Personnel deans might want to take note of that if you have any lazy students anymore. Or when I think of the people of Mendana, I remember the old gentleman I talked to when I was working on the Dana history 24 years ago. He had long been a member of the school board back in the days of World War I in the 20s. He'd been a close friend of the Bondo family, and that family had, as a tribute to one member of their family, built a home for the president of the college called the Bondo Memorial, and it stood just north of Old Main. And then when Pioneer Memorial was built, the Bondo Memorial was moved farther down the hill. And this old gentleman who told me this story said that bothered him, because to him, somehow the Bondo Memorial belonged right there where it had always been. He wasn't sure that he could be happy with Dana taking that away and putting in a new building. But he decided to go to the dedication of Pioneer Memorial anyway. And as he was shaving, getting ready to go, suddenly a line of poetry or literature went through his mind, and it seemed to symbolize for him the fact that Dana must move ahead as times change and must progress. The line, he said, was this, a very simple one: "Sail on, sail on, sail on and on." And he said from that time on, and it went on through the rest of his life, he needed to be as strong and firm a supporter of Dana as he had been up to that time. Stories of this kind of involvement of people could go on endlessly. Of course, people that have made this college and have given it the driving force and the vision to keep it going all this time. There have been times in Dana's history when men and women folded their hands and prayed as if everything depended on God. And then they left their hands folded and waited to see what happened. And not much happened. But there have been times in the history of this last century when people at this college folded their hands and prayed as if everything depended on God, and then unclasped their hands and went to work. And in that partnership of man and God together, the college has grown and prospered and found new visions at which it was capable. In that sense, people, you see, have always been so much a part of this college. We could go back and talk about the primitive setting in which Trinity Seminary was founded a century ago, and all the changes, the astronauts returning from a flight around the world just yesterday. Why, to the people who were here a century ago, that would have been absolutely unbelievable. They couldn't have conceived of it any more than you can conceive of having to build a coal fire in your stove before you go to bed at night in cold winter. One thing hasn't changed. For Dana today still remembers that its primary mission is putting the teaching of Jesus Christ right in the very center of the liberal arts and the vocational preparation. And that, of course, continues to be its most fundamental mission. Now, I probably should finish here. Besides, my watch says I should. I have one other point I want to make. And some of you have heard it before, so you can stop listening now unless you already have.
but something particularly to the students and especially to the freshman class. You know, it's been said, I'm sure, several times, and I'll repeat it. But historically, you're a rather special class. You're the 100th freshman class to enter Dana College, starting with those four students who began their studies in the upstairs of the little house a few blocks from here in the fall of 1884. You're class number 100, and you have selected Dana as your college. And I suspect many of you in choosing Dana have chosen more wisely than you yourselves realize. For Dana is a college that is rich in those things that make a college experience one of the most vital and exciting experiences possible to have. One is the setting, this beautiful campus. I came here early this morning to just wander around a little bit. So I was coming up past Dana Hall of Science and looking up at the Tower of Old Main, that graceful symbol of architecture of a century ago against the blue sky, and suddenly those chimes began to ring out the 8 o'clock hour. Tremendously moving experience. Or look across the way, the stately lines, more recent architecture, but still very graceful, Pioneer Memorial, or the modern buildings here on the south part of the campus. I looked at Unter den Linden, the symbol of our German ties here. I walked over and strolled through the beech grove that commemorates Hans Christian Andersen. This is an excellent setting for a college, but it's much more than that. It is, of course, rich in tradition, with the annual Christmas program of which I spoke. I found out the first semester I was here, there were certain traditions of faculty pranks. Well, unfortunately, time will not permit me to tell you some of those I got involved with, but also a certain amount of student fun and games that goes on regularly. But it is also a tradition of spiritual commitment that the teachings of Jesus shall indeed be the heart of the teaching process. It is men and women of commitment and competence in your faculty who can challenge you to the best there is. And that is why I say you in the freshman class, you have chosen well in coming to Dana. And if you stay with it and take advantage of all the opportunities she has to offer, the day will come much sooner than you realize in the spring of 87, when you'll walk across this platform to receive your diploma. And if you let the spirit of Dana really become a part of your spirit, then you'll come to appreciate more fully the words of that beautiful Dana song. As ivy to thy walls do cling, our hearts shall cling to thee.
Factual, insightful, and very moving. Thank you. It's a pleasure to call you a friend of Dana College, Joe. Thank you for being with us. Friends in Christ, the last item on the program, if you'll notice, it says two items, actually, in one sentence. Declaration of the opening of that 100th academic year and the presentation of the Dana 100 Awards. I would like to reverse those and talk about the Dana 100 Awards first. And with that, I would call your attention to the little pink sheet, which I believe is inserted into your programs. By way of very quick background, as we look forward to this centennial year celebration, a committee which met several times over the last several years under the chairmanship of Phil Poggle decided that one of the things we wanted to do was to try and recognize some of those individuals, organizations, who have played a very significant role in the life of Dana College. Because it's the 100th anniversary, we decided to give approximately 100 of these awards, hence the title, the Dana 100. There will probably be a few more or a few less. We're not set in cement about the exact number, but it will be about 100 peoples or organizations who will be recognized during this year. It goes without saying that when you've got a college of 100 years of history, with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of alumni and friends, that we will not be able to include everyone, that there will be others who will be overlooked who are equally deserving of awards. One thing is certain, however, that those 100 who do receive them will all be truly well-recognized friends of Dana College. We'll be giving these awards out during the course of the year. We had our opening dinner several nights ago, and the first seven names indicated on that pink sheet received awards at that time. One of the ground rules that we set for ourselves, friends, is that we would not give long speeches or background as to why these individuals were selected. Each one of these have, in their own way, been great friends of Dana, so all we're going to do is simply identify in a very quick and cursory way what their association has been with Dana, give the award, and let it go at that. But you are to recognize, of course, that behind the giving of the award, there stand solid bonds of real commitment to Dana College. With those, let's give out a few of these awards this morning. As Dr. Christensen just mentioned, the very existence of Dana College was made possible by a gift of land by the Blair community. And then that the Blair community also made a gift of money available to get us started as well. That was 100 years ago when we kicked off our centennial campaign. Blair community once more showed its concern and dedication to Dana College. We raised over $1 million in cash and pledges from this Blair community. And therefore, as an expression of thanks and as a salute to our hometown, we're going to ask Mayor Stan Jensen to come forward and receive an award being made to Blair. The award, for those of you who haven't seen it, is one of our centennial plates and then the identifying placard underneath.
Maybe you could just stand here so we get the others out. Could you do that?
The second one we want to give out this morning is to Dr. William Christensen, our main speaker this morning, a former faculty member, and has been said several times, the author of The Saga of the Tower, the history of this institution for its first 75 years. I think that those of you who heard Dr. Christensen speak of his speak of Dana College were able to sense something of the emotion and commitment he has to this institution. William Christensen. We intend to give one of these awards to Virginia Korshoy, a revered and respected friend of the college. For many years, she functioned as the unofficial hostess for Dana, entertaining students, faculty, and visitors to the campus in her home. She is the widow of the late Simon Korshoy, who was one of the great friends of Dana College. I think most of you know that almost every building built in the last 25 years on this campus was built by the Korshoy Construction Company, from 1948 to 1967, to be exact. Mrs. Korshoy's health does not permit her to be present this morning. We will deliver it to her home, but perhaps you'd like to give her a round of applause in absentia. Linda King is a relatively new friend of Dana College, but a good friend. She wrote, photographed, and produced our first audiovisual presentation, The Dana Experience. She wrote, photographed, and produced our Centennial Fund audiovisual presentation, The Dana Difference. Those of you who have seen it know that it's an excellent piece of work. Linda King. Ken Rhodes, editor and publisher of the Blair newspapers and a lifelong friend and supporter of Dana College. I've only been here for 5 or 6 years, but I'm impressed, not merely by the fact that we get continued and excellent coverage from Ken Rhodes, but he has always put the best construction on every possible event that's ever taken place. I don't think we've ever gotten a bad word of press from your newspapers, Ken, and we're grateful to you for that. One other award, which will not be presented this morning, which is on your program, is Dr. Howard Dooley with the Nebraska Independent Colleges Foundation. Dr. Dooley could not be present at this occasion. We will give his award to him at another time. The final one to be presented this morning is to Harry Snyder. Harry was instrumental in securing the license and the equipment for our campus radio station, KDCV-FM. It was in a very real way his personal effort that made that radio station possible. Also, Harry, his wife, his family, their generosity has given strong support to providing a new pipe organ in the Dana Chapel, which is scheduled for construction in the near future. Harry Snyder.
Thank you. Appreciate you coming over.
Maybe we could take 10 seconds while we have them all lined up to get an official photograph. Did you intend to do that, Annie? It'll be very difficult to get them all back together again. You want to do? Are you able to do it? Should we do it? Why don't you step right over here?